Hello and welcome to Intrepid Heroes Presents, a podcast where we talk about role-playing games. I'm John Godek, and with me today is Amanda Hammond. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much for having me on, John.
Yeah, so Amanda is an Annie Award-winning freelance RPG writer, a designer, developer, and editor who co-created the Starfinder role-playing game and currently is the managing developer for Starfinder at Paizo. Amanda, can you talk to us a little bit about your role as the managing developer and how it relates to those of the creative director, the designers, and the developers?
Yeah, absolutely. So my job as managing developer involves running and organizing the team that creates all of the Starfinder products, and that is everything from the hardcovers to the adventure path line to the accessories, including the flip mats, the card products, all of that stuff. Starfinder Society as well is under my umbrella. So I'm the manager of those folks, and I coordinate all of the editorial processes for all of those products. Some of those, of course, require much more than others as far as putting together the timing, everything from the concept of a hardcover, for example, to who's going to be the lead developer on it, to how is it going to get outlined, how is it going to get assigned, going through the approval processes for all of that. So it is my job to make sure that those things happen on time. It's my job to make sure that the schedules that are created by our project management group are accurate and are reasonable, and that there isn't any strange anomalies or anything in there. At one point in time, before we had a project manager, I was making those schedules. And at one point in time before that, I was a development coordinator at the company, and so it was my job to make sure all of the departments talked to each other. So that really lended itself very well to this job, which is Starfinder focused. In addition to coordinating all of those schedules and making sure all that stuff happens online, I make sure that the team is very cohesive and communicative across the different lines that they're working on, so that the left hand, as much as possible, knows what the right hand is doing. If we've got a hardcover that's outlined and there's something that is relevant, like a subsystem or something that could be used in an adventure path, we try to make sure that those things line up. Starfinder Society is extremely important to us because that is our biggest... that is our biggest source of player feedback, and it's basically a giant petri dish of playtesting for all of our rules. So I make sure to have, I talk almost daily with Thurston Hillman, who's our Starfinder Society developer, to get information about what is working, what isn't working, what are ways that we can try to head off major problems in organized play that are going to cause him issues. Of course, I'm involved in what scenarios are going on and things. Our creative director, Rob McCreary, is the person who signs off on the content of all of that stuff, but I'm the one who makes sure that all the pieces are in place.
So it sounds a lot like a project management role.
It kind of is.
Doing all this stuff.
Yeah, so that is my job. All of that stuff is my job. Running all the team meetings, coming up with agendas for those, implementing them, interfacing with our publisher, Eric Mona, and the executives to make sure that our, for example, hardcover concepts are approved and that they're comfortable with what's going in them, and taking communication from them back to the team about their feedback of, we like this pitch, but we really feel like the subsystem needs more explanation for us to understand what it is, or we don't necessarily think that it will sell very well. And all of that. So I have to be very concerned with the business side as well as the editorial side.
Wow, yeah, that's quite a bit, yeah.
I do. I need to know kind of a lot of things, yeah. And there's a lot of moving parts. So my job is very much like probably 60 to 70, if not sometimes 80% management and all of that. And then I am also a developer on the line. So I've developed all of the Free RPG Day modules. When there is a problem as far as resources on getting usually one of the hardcovers done on time, I will jump in and grab pieces here and there and develop kind of with the lead developer of that book in tandem. So it's a day-by-day changing thing, exactly what I'm doing at any given moment.
And on top of that, you still freelance also.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, especially if you're freelancing for Starfinder, so who manages you? So whatever developer typically is doing that?
Yes, it's whoever the lead dev is.
And so that's really interesting. So you're managing the developer, but then the developer is managing you as a freelancer.
Yeah, that's true. That is true. Yeah, making sure that the deadlines are hit. And, you know, we have a very collaborative process for the Starfinder team. it's a really kind of nice thing to be able to work with everybody who understands that there's a lot going on at one point in time, and there is very little sort of push-pull where it's like, well, now I get to tell you what to do, and you normally tell me what to do. It's really more of, okay, let's work together to make sure that this product works, and they ask me to make a change. It's no big deal. I make a change. I tell them that there's something going on and we have to, you know, make an adjustment, and they do that, and it works out really well.
Wow. It sounds like a huge amount of responsibility now. And, you know, and you began your career as a journalist. How do you get from there to now managing such a big team?
Oh, my gosh. That is a good question, and a lot of it has to do with timing and economics, which I know are super, super exciting. but I graduated from a university, the Eastern Michigan University, in fact, in 2009, which is one of the worst years ever for graduating with a journalism degree. Yeah. And I actually worked full-time at the Ann Arbor News, which no longer exists, spoilers, for 2 years in my last 2 years of school. So I graduated in 2009. There were massive, massive cuts in 2008 and 2009 across the entire nation. We lost something like 30% of all journalists in those 2 years from layoffs and companies closing and newspapers closing. So it was a very difficult professional environment. Because I had so much experience when I graduated, I did find a job, but I ended up having to work for a very large company that owned the Indianapolis Star, but one of their smaller properties up in Lafayette, Indiana, which is where Purdue University is. And that job was just, I wasn't happy. I realized, you know, that it wasn't something that was very fulfilling. I was a very creative person. That's a very kind of rigid structure. The schedule was really difficult to deal with. I just wasn't enjoying myself, and I didn't see a future for myself in journalism. So I had always been a gamer. I had always gone to Gen Con. I've been going to Gen Con every single year since 2006, and that still holds true now that I'm a professional in the industry. So I decided, well, you know, I really need to find a career that I enjoy, and I have all these editorial skills. You know, I got a business card with my title and things on it. And I went around in 2011 at Gen Con to various companies, seeing if there was any freelance assignments or writing or editing that I could use to kind of get my foot in the door to maybe make some contacts and eventually apply for a full-time job if that was even possible. I didn't know that much about the industry, but I thought, well, that makes sense. I kind of understand how these things work, so let's do that. And I did that, and I ended up talking to several people. One of them was F. Wesley Schneider, who is a former editor-in-chief here at Paizo. And I just explained to him what was going on. He was extremely nice, extremely welcoming. I found out later that it was a very personal mission of him to really invite more marginalized people into creating the game. So he was very interested in hearing what I had to say. And, you know, I asked him originally at first about freelance editing because I thought that that would probably be the maybe most accessible way into the industry. And at the time, Paizo didn't do freelance editing. And so he said, well, you know, I'm really excited to potentially get to work with you and see what you're able to do. Have you ever considered freelance game design? And in the back of my head, I thought, oh, my gosh, that's a thing I can do? I'm not going to be good at that. I've played for, at that point, like a decade. But I don't know what I'm doing. But, you know, being the journalist with, you know, always having the snap answer, I answered, sure, I'll give it a try, thinking I'm probably just going to flame out and not do a good job, but we'll give it a shot. But it actually ended up working out. I pitched him some ideas for some monsters for the Back of the Skull and Shackles adventure path. And my very first monster ended up in, I think, Bestiary 4. It's called the Tiberolith for Pathfinder. So, yeah, there's so many monsters in the first edition Pathfinder, right? But that was how it got started. And so I ended up writing more and more monsters. I made more contacts within the industry. I got connected with Wolfgang Bauer over at Kobold Press, who continues to be a very good friend of mine. And ended up becoming the lead developer and editor on Deep Magic, the first edition Pathfinder Deep Magic, not the fifth edition that came out a couple years ago. And so that was a huge hardcover book, and that really got me, you know, just a lot of experience, especially in comparison to other freelancers.
And that won an Emmy as well, right?
It did, yeah. That got a Judge's Choice Emmy back in 2008, 2013 or something like that. So I did these really big projects. I also worked on the Southlands campaign setting, which is another big hardcover.
And won another
Kickstarter.
Emmy.
That won an Emmy as well. Yeah.
So there's a trend here.
There is. And so I also started doing a lot of writing. I was writing scenarios for Pathfinder Society. I was writing a lot of campaign setting materials for Paizo. I was writing a lot of class options and character options for Kobold Press, and just various different incarnations. And eventually, back in 2014, a job for an assistant developer at Paizo opened up, and I almost didn't apply because I thought there's going to be so many people who have more experience than me. And it turns out, you know, that my application was really strong, and there's a blind test that's involved, and I scored, very high on that. And so three of us got hired, and I was one of them, and that started everything here.
Yeah, so Jason Tondra talked about some of the testing that's done. Yes. He mentioned the editorial test. Can you tell us about the developer test?
Yes, absolutely. So the very beginning of blind developer test happened with my crop of folks who were hired with me. I was hired alongside Crystal Frazier and Linda Zayas Palmer. Crystal, who you may know, is now working with Green Ronin on Mutants and Masterminds, and Linda Zayas Palmer is the lead developer for Organized Play. So we've all done really well, and we've all been in the industry for a while now, So that was the first test, and basically that was such a great idea for a number of different reasons, largely to get past the sort of inherent bias that can be involved in anybody. You can be trying as much as you can, but society is what it is, and when you're interviewing people, there are marginalized folks who are at a disadvantage. And so the blind test really shows their skills first and foremost without names attached to them so that you can really see who performed the best, rank them by who performed the best, and then you get the names. That's the process. That's the process that I use. I'm sure that that's pretty much the process that was used to hire me.
What kind of stuff did you see on the test? I mean, what do they ask you to do? How much time do they give you?
So the original developer test that I took was over 10 pages, and that was just the test.
Right.
It took me about a week while I had a full-time job to finish it. We have since streamlined it significantly and really focused it on the skills that we need for the various roles. And I've got several versions of that test. I had a version of that test. Adam Daigle and I used a version of that test to hire 5 general developers a few years ago. That was the crop in which Ron Lundeen and Eleanor Farron and several other folks here were hired in. And so I refined that down further when we were hiring Starfinder developers. And that test has got an encounter section in which there's an encounter that is essentially raw text of what a freelancer would turn over. And we give a little bit of instruction about, this is an adventure about a certain thing, and the goal of it is this, and it's at this level. Develop this encounter to make sense. And so that really allows us to see their skills in, just fixing up text and making it fun and playable. And we're looking for all of the key points that you need to know as a developer to make an encounter viable within an adventure. So there's that section, there's a monster development section, there's a lore development section. There has been an editing section in some of them. There was one time where I had to hire someone really fast, and we ended up dropping that part off just because it's really long.
Jason talked about the editing guidelines, how it was 80 pages.
Yeah, there's a whole bunch. Yeah. So there's a couple of times where that hasn't been as relevant, and so I've not used that one, but... it's still fairly significant. It's still a very good learning tool for folks who've taken that test. The last time that test went out to folks, I ended up meeting with, there's a pool of maybe 4 people, and we ended up interviewing a couple of them, and there was a couple people who didn't quite, get up there to an interview, but I ended up meeting with them individually to go over what their test was like. I sat down in front of them with my graded version of their test and kind of explained, here's why this is a thing that we look for. Here's what we think you fell a little bit short on. Here's what you did well on. Here's how you can improve for next time. So it's a very good learning and kind of development tool.
That's great feedback to get.
Yeah. And so I'm more than happy to do that because that's kind of an investment in the future for those folks who, if they decide they're still interested in our game and our company, they could be very good candidates next time.
Yeah, what general advice do you have for people interested in becoming writers or artists or developers for a company like Paizo or doing it freelance?
Yeah, so I would say, and a lot of people already have this just kind of inherently, but I would say, you know, really be passionate and be a fan and embrace that. So, you know, the more that you play the game, the more that you pay attention to the editorial standards of the game, the more that you understand not only the mechanical way that the game functions, but also the philosophy behind the game design, the better your mindset will kind of be once you're actually applying for this job or actually taking the test or talking to one of us in an interview. We'll really be able to see that, you know, you're very passionate about the game, but you also understand sort of the basics. For us here, every single time I've done hiring at this company, it's always been a situation of needing a person as soon as possible. And so there have been candidates where we've looked at them and said they have so much potential, they're so talented, they're so smart, but they would need 6 months to kind of get up to speed, and we don't have 6 months. We need somebody who can come in and as close as possible be able to, you know, do the job pretty much soon, you know, reasonably soon, right, with a little bit of training. So that's my first piece of advice, is to just really sort of ingrain yourself in the way that the game works and the way that the company is, and try to understand that as much as you can. I know that's difficult from the outside. But, you know, when you're very engrossed into one game like Pathfinder or Starfinder, you will start to see there are some things that rise to the forefront of stuff that the developers are obviously trying to convey, the tone of the game, that sort of thing. That would be my advice. And also, you know, to get professional experience with editing and with deadlines, if at all possible, you know, have a proven track record of being able to do something on time to a certain standard. We are always really impressed with folks who are coming from various different publishing industries or writing industries, or people who have experience making their own game material, because those people are clearly going to understand the basic stuff, which is you've got to meet your deadlines. It's so important. It's the basis of the entire business. So those are a couple of pieces.
So you were one of the co-creators of Starfinder. So can you tell us a little bit about the impetus and kind of what that process is like coming up with this brand new game?
Sure. Yeah, it was a really kind of hectic time in the company's history. We had decided that we were going to be doing this new game called Starfinder that was the brainchild of Eric Mona in a meeting where there was discussions of, you know, what games and products might Paizo make that's not Pathfinder. And he literally just kind of said, Starfinder, it's Pathfinder in space, and it's, you know, science fantasy, it's far future. And, you know, various months down the line, everybody thought that was a fantastic idea. We needed something, you know, for Gen Con further out, and we're like, all right, we're just gonna do this. So but really the way it came about, because you know, we hadn't made a new game in a really long time, and the folks who had made Pathfinder the first time around were on the Pathfinder design team, so we were all kind of really trial by fire and learning. And the general way that that went down was that James Sutter was the original creative director, who was previously doing some fiction, and he had written a bunch of stuff for the company. He was a senior manager at the company. He was put in charge of the project. Rob McCreary was the story lead, the setting lead. Owen Casey Stevens, who's no longer with the company, was the rules lead. And then they were originally working up some kind of concepts and working on some rules. The Pathfinder design team was doing some initial design on some very, very early stuff, like very early class stuff, very early equipment, economy stuff, things like that. It all got turned over to that team, and then that was really before there was like a solid project management structure in place, and so it started to become clear that we really need an actual team of people to work on this game. You know, we've got a deadline that's not going to move to get this game out by Gen Con. There needs to be a team assembled, and at that point, that's when Wes Schneider started building that team out of people who had experience working on system design stuff and experience creating really big hardcovers, for example. And you know, I really fell into that category as one of the folks at the company at the time. And so I got pulled onto the team. Jason Keeley got pulled onto the team. We had Crystal, who was doing editing and things like that, for and some development on the game as well. So we became the core design team, and we just kind of looked at what needed to be done. There was a new class that needed to be designed, the Solarian. The equipment section needed to be entirely built out. Owen did the first pass on tactical rules, which was largely taking most of the Pathfinder stuff in, taking a stab at what he thought needed to be adjusted for a science fantasy game. And then that chapter went over to me, and I did so much work on that, like so much of that stuff, like the subsystems, death and dying, a whole bunch of that stuff is all my game design. And then we kind of passed things back and forth. I did quite a bit on the equipment chapter as well, which was another situation of Owen kind of taking a stab at a whole bunch of things, turning it over to me doing as heavy of a development pass as I could given the time involved.
So how much time did it take from when you decided we're going to start this to when it launched at Gen Con?
Oh my goodness. I want to say it was probably a solid year of working on the game. Yeah, and honestly, that's really not a lot of time for an entire massive RPG system. And so that year and some change, that was including kind of that initial spinning up period, including all the discussions about what the game should be, how are we going to make these major mechanical changes, things that resulted in like the HPSP system to make it a little bit more palatable for science fantasy, so that you don't always have to have a healer.
And
you can have parties made up of different kinds of character classes, the different discrepancies, the EAC-KAC breakdown, the math behind monster attack progression and things like that. All that stuff was kind of happening and spinning up, and then all of the rules actually getting written and then developed. It was all kind of all done at once. Mm-hmm. So, but yeah, it was a while, but it was also not a while. It was also something that was a heavy deadline.
And it was a pretty small team, it sounds like, mm-hmm. you know, doing all this development. And even now, compared to the Pathfinder second edition team, yep. it's still relatively small,
yeah.
even though the game has grown quite a bit.
It is. That's true. Yeah. That's probably the biggest reason why so much of my job is still just on the ground development, just doing what needs to be done to get the books ready for either layout or editing, depending on how the process is going. We have looked at various solutions to try to make sure that we have enough development resources. It's a constant sort of back and forth kind of struggle, and we've looked at whether the team needs to grow or not. And, you know, I think that we all have an opinion on what that answer is, but it sort of remains to be seen right. whether that's something that will come to fruition.
So what's next for Amanda and Starfinder? Can you tell us a little bit about what we might expect coming down the road?
Yeah, so one of the really exciting things that that I'm working on, that I'm the Rob and I are liaising with Amazon on the Alexa project, mm-hmm. which might be mm-hmm. something that you have heard about. This is a voice game for Starfinder that is based on the Beginner Box adventure that's in there, the solo adventure for Beginner mm-hmm. Box, which I actually wrote, called Scoundrels on the mm-hmm. Spike. So there's a pilot episode that's available now. And later on, actually March 10th, which your viewers may or may not have access to, depending on when this comes up, or your listeners, I should say. So that pilot is actually being re-released on March 10th. And by re-release, I mean there's going to be some expanded content in there. There's going to be additional player characters that you can use
cool. yeah.
in there. Yeah, there's a sort of modified opening section to really mm-hmm. get you into the story faster. Character creation has changed, whereas it was a very general list of questions about what you would do. Mm-hmm. Now it's specific to the adventure, and you know, a space goblin pops out. Do you greet him? Do you shoot him? Mm. Do you hide from him? Those sorts of things that we really think refines the experience and is very much targeted toward folks who might have never played a role-playing game in their life, might have never heard of a tabletop role-playing game in their life, while also balancing the need to have it be good content for our fans and have it be satisfying and interesting to our fans. So despite the fact that it is based on that adventure, it is not exactly that adventure. There are new things wrapped into it. There's a new character that's in there. And I'm going to spill a little bit of beans here. It does lead directly into the next episodes, which will be premium episodes that mm-hmm. will that you'll need to pay for, where the pilot is free. Those are based on Incident Absalom Station. So there'll be 6 episodes based on Incident Absalom Station that will be released at a time that I think will probably communicate closer to March 10th. Mm-hmm. But we've got sort of a plan for when those will be released. But that's a really exciting thing that I've been working on with the folks over at Amazon. They are really, really big fans of the game, and it's really fun.
That's really cool. That's good
to
hear.
Yeah, it's really fun to sort of watch them bring to life something that they're super passionate about. James Sutter is writing the scripts for the voice games, because there needs to be written scripts that they can program in there, and because we are making changes from the printed version, we need somebody to sort of be at the helm of that from a writer standpoint. So it's super exciting for me to be able to work with James again. I'm having a great time working on it, and I really hope that this is kind of a new frontier for role-playing games.
Yeah.
I hope that it's something that our fans can enjoy, because it is a new medium, but also that it just brings a whole new audience to be exposed to this game, you know, mm-hmm, that we mm-hmm. are having a great time making things for.
Yeah, no, I think that's really cool, especially it gives a chance for a single player who's not sure if they want to get involved in group play or something like that to experience it. And then if they really like it, then, hey, maybe I'll go and look what it's like to play with other people.
Absolutely. You know, so. Yeah, that's what we're hoping as well. Yeah. And that's some of the feedback that we've gotten. The game is actually one of the best reviewed games of all of the Alexa skills.
Wow.
And that's saying something, because there are tens of thousands of Alexa skills that are available right now. And also, the game has gotten a standard deviation above the normal number of reviews that these games normally get within their lifetimes of being released.
So a lot of people are trying it out.
Yeah. So I think there were normally an average of 80 reviews of these skills over, like I said, their entire lifetime. This pilot was released in December. And it had 160 a few weeks ago. It's probably up to even more than that now. So a lot of the feedback that we've been getting is, I never heard of this, and this was so much fun. Yeah. I really enjoyed doing this in my car or, you know, while I was cleaning my house. And then there's a lot of other folks who were like, I love role-playing games. I love Starfinder, but I don't have a group, and this actually lets me play.
Right.
So that's very exciting to hear, because, again, it's opening new doors for folks.
Yeah, and no, I think that's really cool. So, Amanda, thanks for joining us on the podcast today.
No problem.
I look forward to seeing you again, hopefully at PaizaCon, maybe some other conventions.
Yeah, absolutely. I'll be around.
Thanks.
Thank you.